This is the last lecture for the course, and I hope it goes smoothly for us. In general, limits do not commute. Since the integral is defined with a limit, since we saw in the last lecture that integrals do not always respect limits of functions, we know some concrete instances of non-commutation of limits. The fact that continuity is defined with a limit and that the limit of continuous functions need not be continuous gives another example of situations in which limits do not commute. Let us now turn to a situation in which limits do commute. Theorem. Fix a set S and a point little s in capital S. Assume that the functions fj converge uniformly on the domain capital S take away little s to a limit function f. Suppose that each function fjx has a limit as x goes to s. Then f itself has a limit as x goes to s. And the limit as x goes to s of f of x equals the limit as j goes to infinity, limit as x goes to s of fjx. Because of the way that f is defined, we may rewrite this conclusion in the following way. Limit as x goes to s, limit as j goes to infinity of fjx equals limit as j goes to infinity, limit as x goes to s of fjx. So you see very explicitly here that the limit as x goes to s and the limit as j goes to infinity commute. And it's uniform convergence that saves the day for us here. So proof, let alpha j be the limit as x goes to s of fjx, let epsilon be bigger than 0, then there is a number capital N bigger than 0, independent of x in capital S take away little s, such that if j is bigger than capital N, then absolute value fjx minus fx is less than epsilon over 4. Fix j and k bigger than N, choose delta bigger than 0, so that 0 less than absolute x minus s less than delta implies that absolute fjx minus alpha j is less than epsilon over 4, and absolute fkx minus alpha k is less than epsilon over 4. Then, absolute alpha j minus alpha k less than or equal to absolute alpha j minus fjx plus absolute fjx minus fx plus absolute fx minus fkx plus absolute fkx minus alpha k. The first and last of these expressions are less than epsilon over 4 by the choice of x, namely absolute x minus s less than delta. The middle two expressions are less than epsilon over 4 by the choice of capital N, and therefore little j and little k. We conclude that the sequence alpha j is Cauchy. Let alpha be the limit of that sequence. Now let k go to infinity and the inequality absolute alpha j minus alpha k less than epsilon, and we learn then that absolute alpha j minus alpha is less than or equal to epsilon for j bigger than capital N. Now, with delta is above, and with absolute x minus s less than delta, we have absolute fx minus alpha less than or equal to absolute fx minus fjx plus absolute fjx minus alpha j plus absolute alpha j minus alpha. By the choices we have made, the first term is less than epsilon over 4, the second is less than epsilon over 4, and the third is less than or equal to epsilon. Altogether, then, if 0 is less than absolute x minus s is less than delta, then absolute fx minus alpha is less than 2 epsilon, and that's the desired conclusion, namely that fx tends to alpha. Example. Let's look once again at fjx equals x to the j. You will learn as you go on in math that looking at the same examples over and over again is often very helpful, and that's what we're doing here. And we see that the limit as j goes to infinity fjx equals 0, which we call fx for all x smaller than 1. Thus, the limit as x goes to 1 from the left of fx is 0, because fx is the 0 function. But the limit as j goes to infinity, the limit as x goes to 1 from the left of fjx is the limit as j goes to infinity of 1, which is 1. So you see that explicitly here that in this example, the two limits don't commute. But of course, the functions fj do not converge uniformly. Parallel with our notion of Cauchy sequence of numbers, we have a concept of Cauchy sequence of functions in the uniform sense. Here's the definition. A sequence of functions fj on a domain S is called a uniformly Cauchy sequence if, for each epsilon bigger than 0, there's a capital N bigger than 0, so that if j and k are bigger than n, then absolute fjx minus absolute fkx is less than epsilon for all x and s. And the point you should notice here is that the conclusion, absolute fjx minus fkx less than epsilon, involves choosing j and k independent of x. Proposition, a sequence of functions fj is uniformly Cauchy on a domain S if and only if the sequence converges uniformly to a limit function f on the domain S. And for the proof, we'll leave that as an exercise for you. And now we're going to turn and look at differentiability. So consider the function fjx, which is 0 for x less than or equal to 0, jx squared if 0 less than x less than or equal to 1 over 2j, and x minus 1 over 4j if x is bigger than 1 over 2j and less than infinity. So this is defined on the entire real line, and this function is continuously differentiable, as you can calculate for yourself. If you differentiate each of the three pieces, you will see that they fit together in a very nice continuous way. And this sequence of functions converges uniformly on the entire real line to the function f at x equals 0 if x is less than or equal to 0, and x if x is bigger than 0. So here's what you notice. Each of the functions fj is continuously differentiable, but the limit function fx isn't differentiable at all at the origin. So it turns out we must strengthen our convergence hypotheses if we want the limit process to respect differentiation. The basic theorem is as follows. Suppose that a sequence fj of differentiable functions on an open interval I converges pointwise to a limit function f. Suppose further that the sequence fj prime converges uniformly on I to a limit function g. Then the limit function f is differentiable on I, and f prime equals g for all x and I. So the main point to notice here is we don't assume that fj converges uniformly. We've got to work harder. We've got to have the derivative functions fj prime converging uniformly. Proof. Let epsilon be bigger than 0. The sequence fj prime is uniformly Cauchy. Therefore, we may choose capital N so large that j and k bigger than capital M implies absolute fj prime x minus absolute fk prime x less than epsilon over 2 for all x and I. Fix a point p and I to find mu j of x equal fjx minus fjp divided by x minus p for all x and I, x not equal to p. It is our intention to apply switching the limits theorem to the functions mu j. First, notice that for each j, we have the limit as x goes to p of mu j x equals fj prime p, because those mu j is just Newton quotients for the function fj. Thus, the limit as j goes to infinity and the limit as x goes to p of mu j x is the limit as j goes to infinity of fj prime p, which by our hypothesis, the fj primes, of course, converge uniformly to g. So the limit as j goes to infinity of fj prime p is gp. That calculates the limit in one order. On the other hand, the limit as j goes to infinity of mu jx equals fx minus fp divided by x minus p, which we'll call mu x for x and I take away p. If we could show that this convergence is uniform, then our switching the limits theorem applies, and we may conclude that the limit as x goes to p of mu x equals the limit as j goes to infinity, limit as x goes to p of mu j x equals the limit as j goes to infinity of fj prime x, fj prime p, which is gp. But this just says that f is differentiable at p, and the derivative equals g, and that's what we want to prove. So all we have to do is show that this convergence is uniform. To verify the uniformity, we apply the mean value theorem to the function fj minus k. For x not equal to p, we have mu jx minus mu kx equals, and I'm just writing down here the definition of mu j and mu k, it equals 1 over absolute x minus p, absolute value fjx minus fkx minus the quantity fjp minus fkp. And so we're applying the mean value theorem to the function fj minus fk, and we get 1 over x minus p times the difference of the arguments, absolute x minus p, times the quantity fj minus fk prime evaluated at c for some c between x and p. And of course, the x minus p's cancel, and we end up with absolute fj minus fk quantity prime of c. Now, the displayed line at the very beginning of the proof guarantees that the last line is less than or equal to epsilon over 2. That shows that the mu j's converge uniformly, and it concludes the proof. With a little additional effort, one could actually show that in the theorem, you only need to assume the fj's converge at a single point. And one of the exercises asks you to work out the details there. And a final interesting comment is this. If we make the additional assumption that each of the fj primes is continuous, then the proof of the theorem becomes much easier. For then, fjx equals fjx naught plus integral from x naught to x of fj prime t dt for some fixed x naught in the interval. That's just the fundamental theorem of calculus. The hypothesis that the fj prime converge uniformly, that implies that the integrals converge to the integral from x naught to x of g of t dt. The hypothesis that functions fj converge at x naught then allows us to conclude that the sequence fjx converges for every x to fx and fx equals fx naught plus the integral from x naught to x of g of t dt. The fundamental theorem of calculus then yields that f prime equals g as desired. Final example, and this is the very end of the course. Consider the sequence of functions fjx equals j to the minus 1/2 sine jx. This sequence converges uniformly to the identical zero function fx identically equal to zero, but fj prime equals j to the 1/2 cosine jx does not converge at any point. We can sum up this result by saying that the limit of j goes to infinity of ddx fjx does not equal to ddx of the limit as j goes to infinity of fjx. Thank you for listening to all my lectures. God be with you.